My name is Lila, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Lila.
Thank you for having me back in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I'm glad to be here. You know, I also want to take a moment. He's not here, but he'll have to listen to the tape, to thank Charles. You know, we were just talking about Charles a minute ago, that he's a feeling rather than a thought, you know. Just a feeling. And I really appreciate knowing him and having him in my life. And I also wanted to thank John Lancaster and his wife, who was a few years ago in Tulsa when we had a spontaneous discussion of the steps that turned into just 6 hours with a 15-minute break. It was really amazing that that John was right there and taped that. And it's been very helpful to me and to a lot of people that I know to listen to that. And I always said that I would never do it again. But, you know, that's what you get for saying never. So now I'm back in Tulsa. And I also said that if I ever did, again, take a moment to try to just slow down and talk about the steps, that I would do it in Tulsa, Oklahoma, before I would do it anywhere else. And so that's what this weekend is really about. And as most of you know, in Los Angeles, Santa Monica, Jane and I and a number of people for many years have been practicing a step per month. And what we do in our life is the normal exercise of our program. But aside from that, we have practiced concentrating on one step every single month. It really works out very well since there's 12 months in the year. And I don't know how you practice anything without doing it over and over and over and over and over again. And every single year, it becomes more exciting as we approach the year to do the steps. And every year, certain things begin to pop out, and that is that you can pretty much count on how your life will change and be affected, and you'll start looking forward to that first the January when you look at that month and you think, this is the month when I'm going to think about what am I still powerless over in my life? Because isn't the steps really for people who are sober, trying to just live their life today? And so in the first month of January, you know, we talk about the honesty that's associated with that step and how to really be honest with yourself and what are you powerless over? And it used to be something as big as alcohol. And now it's something sometimes as simple as the guy next door. You know, it doesn't really matter. But powerlessness has to be experienced. And in the month of January, we think about all of those things so we can sense how we are and become conscious of how we feel and the honesty required in that. And, of course, you're powerless the minute you're out of balance. You know, I thought about it on the plane. I thought, how do you possibly condense 10 years' worth of practicing the steps and discussing them with people every single solitary month in 10 hours in Tulsa, Oklahoma, including breaks about, you know, 6 hours? It's impossible, really, I think. But then again, I suppose miracles are to make things that are impossible possible. So I was thinking about how to do that, and perhaps we won't refer to the reading of the big book this time, but we will just the steps. We'll talk about the powerlessness of the first step as we do in the month of January, and then the power that you are restored to, that balance. Because when you're powerless, you're out of balance. Your human spirit is out of balance with your spiritual nature. And if they're out of balance, you're out of balance. And the power to be restored in the second step and the beginning of that new idea. It means an old idea to be out of balance. And it's a new idea to have this power in our life. And then in the third step, how to turn that over, and the act of faith and turning over that old idea and the decision to do that. And in the fourth month, what an exciting month to find out what is in the way. What are those fears, the courage to look at them, the courage to look at those old ideas that still run our lives, and the problem. What is the problem you have in your sober life? Well, the problem you have in your sober life is what is in the way between you and God, and that can be revealed. Good to see you, Miss Pam, in the fourth step. And then in the first step, the step that will show us our level of integrity and personal dishonesty, and what are our personal motives for what we do, and the nature of who we are, and the nature of our wrongs. I mean, the nature of our wrongs are very different than the things that we do wrong. And the sixth step, the most powerful step of them all, in many respects, this step is acceptance, the beginning of the cooperation between God, the willingness to take that old idea and accept that you still have it, and be willing to look at that. And then in the seventh step, the automatic step of humility, where we're going to ask for help. Help with that new idea, because that old idea is now an old idea, and the minute you ask for help, why, it becomes a new idea. Good morning.
Good morning.
And step eight, you know, the balancing step. the attitude change? Who is it? Who do you have to address to get current? And in step 9, how to get current, how to have that right attitude, it calls it in the book, The Art of Change. And in step 10, to be current, to be current. The world of the pause, the world of silence, the world where it all really belongs, and how to stay current with your new idea and how to pause. Step 11, the step of questions and spirituality, and an aid to the new idea, and how to live in the question of life rather than the answer. And step 12, of course, the thank you step, you know, the thank you step, the gratitude step, service and balance. It's so hard for me, you know, to be reading from some sort of outline, because I've never done that before. I'm completely spontaneous in anything that I ever communicate, but I'm really going to try to stick with that today, so I'm going to apologize right away for what may seem like a lecturing kind of contained thing, but I'm going to try it this way. Otherwise, you know, I could go off on a tangent about one little word for 7 hours, and we'd never get to finish the step. It comes with the gift of being Irish, I think. In our meetings, just to give you an idea, so that's what we're going to talk about in the next 2 days. We're going to talk about those steps in detail. I'm going to use the 12 and 12 and allow you in your own meetings to refer to the big book, because the manner by which you read the big book with sober eyes is completely different than the first year of your sobriety, the second year, the third year, the fourth year. And the more you read the book, it's not a matter of chronological time or even time sober, it's the amount of time you spend reading the book, the quality of it. You know, how many times are you going to read that book? And every time you read it, it'll mean more, you'll see something else. You go, oh my God, I had no idea. I had no idea. And then the formation of this magic miracle is going to occur in your life, because you'll be putting together all of these thoughts and you'll say, yes, this is the perception change that I have. This is who I've become. Often just reading a book. It's got so much in it. And when you can read the book, and the reason we put the book into our step practice every month is so that we would finish the book at the end of the year. Because without the demand, as we met once a month, to have read part of the book, well, I don't know about you, but I probably wouldn't get around to it. But because I have to meet with my peers, my fellow sober members of AA, believe me, I am competitive just like they all are. We pretend we're not. And we all read so that we can all say we've done it, and we're current with each other. And isn't that how AA really works? So what we do in our practice every month is we start our meeting with an introduction. We go around the room. We say, hello, my name is Lila, and I'm an alcoholic. We discuss whether or not there's any business. And I'm putting this on tape because so many people have asked for that information. And then we discuss any business. Anybody speaking? Are there any meetings? Is there any little information that we want to share with one another? We then celebrate birthdays. For every month, there's 12 people in our group. That's how many people fit in the room. It's a very good number. More than that, you really don't have the quality of sharing. So 10 or 12 or under is good, and every person has a month. It's their month. And in their month, they are sort of in charge of the meeting, and they bring the cake and the cookies and the plates and whatever is necessary. And we celebrate birthdays, and we give our celebrate that. The little monthly guide that we forgot to pass out, which we'll give you if you have, oh, you've got it. Oh my God. That you have in your hand. Then, you know, we usually, the person usually reads that before they come to the meeting, because again, we want to save the meeting for as much sharing as possible. And then we start and we read the chapters that relate to that given month in the big book. For the first 3 or 4 months, of course, the chapters relate directly to some of the steps. And then after that, it's about how to live. And so we pick out the key phrases in the book about our life today, and what we identify with, and then we go directly to the step that we're working on. If you and then, of course, we have a break, and then we discuss in depth how we experience powerlessness. How did it feel? What did that feel like? In the month of February, we would talk about how we had a moment where we realized, my God, I think I have been restored in this area. I never noticed that before. I'm acting in more balance, a little less calamity, a little more serenity. I'm a little more in balance. And in the third month, we'll talk about how many times we had to make that decision. And we'll listen to what we think in that third month. And believe me, after you've listened to what you've thought for 30 days, you will be willing and eager to do an inventory. And then we do an inventory based on and this inventory, of course, now is for people that are practicing the steps and already have had a sponsor and already have done all the typical, normal AA stuff. This is just on top of, because this inventory we do with nobody's name on it but our own. And we look at the fears that exist in our life today. Not necessarily in the past. If they happen to relate to the past, then that's nice. But the fears that exist in our life today, this very moment. And in the fifth month, we're all eager about how much we have to talk to one another about, and how we're going to refine those, and what old ideas we are left with. And we work with each other to pick one old idea. You can't work on all of yourself, you know, all of these things. So in the month of May, we pick an old idea out of this inventory and out of this discussion. And that old idea, we stay with that for the whole year. And then in the month of, pardon me? Yes, and like an old idea, for instance, the old idea in the month of May would be the most common old idea of them all. I am not enough. I mean, isn't this not the basis, really, for almost everything? And so in the month of June, the acceptance month, we accept that we still have that old idea that we are not enough. And the acceptance of that old idea that we are not enough makes us entirely willing. And in the month of July, we are delighted to go around and say, help me, help me, help me to feel that I am enough. Help me, help me, help me, help me. If you say help me every single solitary day for 30 days, you will intuitively have a spiritual memory that will kick in and begin to automatically say it for you when you can't say it for yourself. Marvelous thing. In the month of August, we discuss, and we're always shocked about how many people are still in our life that annoy the hell out of us for some reason or the other. And we are conscious of that. And it's nothing more than become conscious of your spiritual application of life. That's really it. And then in the ninth month, we go about how to amend our own mind, our own thinking, on a daily basis. So you look in the eyes of somebody, and to see them through new eyes about the third or fourth or fifth or sixth day, it's really amazing how unconsciously I have had so much anger, rage, and resentment that I didn't even realize until I was conscious of it. And then I saw them as, you know, fellow children on the path. In the tenth month, we talk about how hard it is to pause, how hard it is to stop, how hard it is to just pause and realize we're making a new mistake. They call them in the big book new mistakes. I mean, for once you've turned a mistake over, it's over. Once you've turned it, it's gone. You've done the inventory, it's gone. If you happen to bring it back today, which is a brand new day, it's a new mistake. And that's what we do. We pause, we pause, we pause, we pause. Pausing is so difficult. And in the 11th month, if you've paused a lot, then you're full of questions. Because in the pause, you'll say, what am I to do? How can I do this? What do I do? Where do I do it? Should I do it? When do I do it? How do I do it? Those are questions that belong with your God. If you know the answer, you're in trouble. It's your answer. No question that it's limited. The question of life really becomes the most exciting thing. I mean, if you're typical of most people on AA, like myself, then you will have gotten sober and immediately gone out there to create the answer. You'll find out you didn't do a very good job. You're missing something. But because you stayed sober and attended meetings regularly, then what you're missing, you'll be able to say, what is it? Where are you? How can I find you? I don't even know if you exist. Please exist. What do I need to do? Should I? Should I not? Shall I? Where? How? When? Is it a mistake that, you know, if there is no mistake that you're here this morning? Searching, searching, searching. Wouldn't it be sad if we found what we were looking for? It's the journey. It's the searching. It's the consciousness and the conscious contact of that searching in the 11th step that's so satisfying. It's knowing that when you ask the question and you go to sleep at night, that just because you're asleep, the whole spiritual universe has not shut down. That you might be in the biggest pause of it all, that the greatest miracle of all may be happening while you're sound asleep and can't get in your own way. And then the 12th month where we go around and we consciously every day say, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. So we can experience what is gratitude. And that's really how it works in an overview for us. Today, we're going to go through the first seven steps in the 12 and 12, including that general overview of that inventory, which has really been a wonderful experience. I will tell you just so that it should not be ignored, even though I won't go into it in detail now on the tape, and that is that the first the chapter, the doctor's opinion and Bill's story, as you're reading those in your meetings or with whoever it is that you share this journey with, the doctor's opinion and Bill's story is the problem, step one. So when you're studying step one, you're studying the problem, which is the doctor's opinion and Bill's story. It tells you all you'll ever need to know about the disease of alcoholism. Chapters 2, 3, and 4 in the big book all relate to step two. It'll tell you everything you'll ever need to know about the solution to that problem. Everything you'll ever need to know. Chapter 5, how it works, is step 3 and 4. 3 and 4. How to make the decision, and what the decision is that you have made, which is to look at yourself. So all you'll ever need to know about how to begin to look at yourself and what to do, you will find in Chapter 5 in the Big Book. Chapter 6, Into Action, covers steps 6 and 11 in a very quick and broad way, narrow way rather, quick. And that is why, in 1948, I believe it was, Bill Wilson wrote the 12 and 12 for people like us that had been sober long enough to have gotten through and understood their problem, understood the solution, understood that they were willing to have a look at themselves, and now what do we do? How do we take this information and have a closer relationship with our God? And that's what occurs in the 12 and 12. So for people on the search like myself, and I hope like you, that is what it is. The search begins, and through 6 through 11 is in the Big Book, and the detail of that and the baby steps are in the 12 and 12. And of course, the 7th chapter of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, Working with Others, directly relates to the 12th step of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. The other steps to the wives, the family afterwards, the employers, of how to live in the sober world, because what is it that we all share in common other than the disease and the solution? Well, we share each other. We share people. The greatest problem in anybody's life is the people in it, and how to do that, how to live at home, because it's irrelevant if you have this program and you're talking about it and you're running around Alcoholics Anonymous and you go home and you're fighting with your family. Really. And if you have lack of acceptance about your position in life or yourself, then something's wrong. And that's why those chapters. I used to hate those chapters. You used to think, what the hell have they got to do with me? I, you know, run a business. I don't need to do the employer thing. Somebody else will do it for me. That's why you have a personnel office. I mean, it was really a narrow point of view. And now I find that all of that information is about everybody. The family, the wives, the people you work with. I mean, you have to know about that. And then, of course, in these chapters, if you read them from your own point of view, in your current day state, they're about you. And A Vision for You, the most beautiful chapter in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it tells us where we're going in this life and where we're going in the next and why it is that we're exactly the same. It talks about all of it in here. It talks about being willing to do anything and about the spiritual experience and finding yourself, you will find, and finding God, he found himself. Now, normally you're told, you know, the reverse, but no, you go look in the search for God, you will find yourself, because is it not that the great reality is deep within, as it is told to us in the beginning in the Big Book? So the search for God is a search for yourself, and you don't have to go to Tibet to do it now. And it talks about the acceptance, the great acceptance of the people, the first few hundred people in Alcoholics Anonymous, all with under 4 years of sobriety. They had seen miracles, and one was to come to them. They had visioned the great reality, their loving and all-powerful Creator. I mean, that's really extraordinary, isn't it, that kind of acceptance with so little time. So I'm going to put the Big Book away now, hesitatingly, but I have to, for sake of time. But in your meetings, I would hope that you would not do that. You know, I have found with the steps, I want to make sure now that I'm not off. Also today, after we finish the 12 and 12, it would be wonderful if we could leave today, and we'll have some time at the end of the day. I'm going to make sure there's some time at the end of the day. We'll go through the steps, we'll take a couple of breaks, and then at the end of the day, perhaps we can perfect a new idea. First find out what the old idea is that you may have come with here today about yourself, and leave here with a new idea. A new idea that will actually, I can guarantee you, if you spend a moment with it every day, will totally and completely change your life. In a very big way. Maybe not the outside, but certainly the inside. Very good chance it'll change the outside too. And it certainly will change your perception of everybody and everything in your life. I think the most important part of the 12 and 12 and the beginning of the study of the steps happens to be the table of contents. Because if you're really in trouble, and you don't have much time, and you left your glasses somewhere, you can't read a long time. If you open up the 12 and 12 and you look at the 12 steps, in the table of contents, they'll save your life. And in a brief way, and this is how I, for myself over the years, have come to read this book. On page 5, and then I won't I see you have your 12 and 12. The first step we admitted we were powerless over alcohol. Admission of the powerlessness is the first step in liberation. Well, we know that. But to admit that you're powerless over everything else in your life will begin to make this unmanageability go away. And isn't that what you want to do? Catch it really right at the beginning. And step two is a rallying point to sanity, a right relationship to God. And I'm reading right out of the book. So there's a degree of balance there when you get this power back. And step three, dependence as a means to independence. You don't have to worry about writing anything down, you know, or anything like that, because between the printout and your own study, because isn't the program, nobody can do the steps for you. And I can just tell you what my experience is and what I look at when I first look at the book, but, you know, it's for you, it'll be what you do and how you look at it. And this is what I see. And this is nothing more than to have the opportunity to share with you. Dependence is a means of independence in the third step. And the fourth step, the motive. How instincts can exceed their proper function. Step five. And the other reason I want to be a little slow on the tape, I'll be perfectly honest with you, is there's a lot of people. I attended a meeting for the blind, and I want them to have this tape too. So I'm trying to be a little more exacting. How instincts can achieve their proper function is the motive. Step five will be our reactions. Beginning of true kinship with man and God. Lose sense of isolation. Receive forgiveness and give it. Learn humility. Gain honesty and realism about ourselves. That is a new idea, by the way. Step six, acceptance. Necessity of taking action. Point at which we abandon limited objectives and move toward God's will for us. I mean, a limited objective versus God's will would be entering this fourth dimension that they talk about in the big book. And in your meetings, you'll find that they will correlate. They'll be talking about the fourth dimension at the same time that you will be studying the step that will tell you that you want to leave. Step seven, the help, at the beginning of asking questions, the beginning of asking for help, the avenue to true freedom of the human spirit, strength from weakness, self-centered fear, the chief activator of defects. Step seven is a change in attitude which permits us to move out of ourselves and toward God. Step eight, the judgment. The necessity of an exhaustive study of the past, the kind of harms done to others, avoiding extreme judgments. Step eight is the beginning of the end of isolation. A few moments ago they said it was the beginning of the end. Step five, to lose sense of isolation, the sense of isolation. And by the time you get to step eight, they have told you that it is the beginning of the end of isolation. I mean, these things are just absolutely on a little path. They're like water running in the same direction. Can't take one step out. Impossible. They all run together, one after the other. Step nine, a tranquil mind is the first prerequisite for good judgment. Talking about honest feelings now and amending your thinking. Peace of mind cannot be bought at the expense of others. Step 10. Can we stay sober and keep emotional balance? Now they're talking about emotional balance. You haven't had a drink in a while. You should be more concerned about emotional balance than anything else. Under all conditions, self-searching becomes a regular habit by the 10th step. Admit, accept, and patiently correct your defects. I mean, these are really in the order that it happens, isn't it? First you have to admit it, then you have to accept them, and to admit is step one, two, three, four, to accept six and seven, and to correct is eight and nine. So they always are in order. Emotional hangover. I love reading about soul sickness in the big book, Emotional Hangovers. Isn't that what happens to people that have been sober for a while? In order not to have this spiritual deficiency that causes people to drink, nothing else causes anyone to drink. Nothing. And spiritual deficiency. And in order not to have it, you have to enlarge your spiritual life. Now, if you are not in the process of enlarging your spiritual life, and you are in the process of a spiritual deficiency, well then perhaps you'll end up in these places where you're not supposed to be. And you won't have that defense against the first drink that frightens every newcomer into terror. You know, the defense is the spiritual enlargement of your life. The weakness is the spiritual deficiency. So it won't be because somebody died or did something awful to you. It'll be because you were deficient at that time. You did not give yourself the protection you need. And this is step 11. It talks about meditation, which is the answer, and prayer, which is the question. connection between self-examination and meditation and prayer. An individual adventure. I love that it says an individual adventure, because by the time you get to the 11th step, it is an individual adventure. You can't give it to anybody. I mean, I can tell you for me, in all the years that I've been sober, and particularly in the last 10 years, after reaching that point at 18 years of sobriety where it was very, very dark, because I really had not, didn't have this program in a consistent manner for myself. I mean, a lot of conversation and in and out of meetings, da-da-da-da-da. And you're sober 18 years, you're supposed to know something, and people believe you do. And the fact of the matter is, inside, I was void. So in the last 10 years, I have learned how to experience being alive. I was surviving before, for 18 years. I survived. I'm living now. It's a big difference. Surviving requires an enormous amount of thought. Living requires nothing more than experience and being conscious of my experience, because my memory has taken over, that spiritual memory that kicks in, the intuition that we're promised. And it says, daily petitions for understanding of God's will and the grace to carry it out. Well, you know, to me a petition is to ask, 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 ask. First couple of years of my sobriety, you know, you don't ask for anything. Forget it. I ask for absolutely everything. What else am I going to do but to ask? And now I expect miracles. I kind of hope they were there, but since I started asking and getting every single solitary time the answer to my question, I believe in miracles. I expect a miracle. I wouldn't know what it would be like not to have them. Actual results of prayer beyond question. Step 12, the joy of living, the gratitude step. It says action is the key word. I used to think action was running around, you know, doing all the things in AA that you're supposed to do, and then, you know, that's fine, and that works too, because if we didn't do that, we wouldn't stay. We have to get in the habit of taking the action at the beginning in order to stay. But, you know, here we are now. Action takes on a whole new meaning. Action to me means to practice saying thank you. That's what action means. Action means actually reading the book. Actually pausing before I respond in a negative way. Actually taking contrary action to that thought in my mind that, given its own magic and power, will absolutely bring its darkness upon me, cast the shadow in my own light. So practice, action is the key word. And then it says something magnificent, and we have not left the table of contents yet. They don't even have the page 9. A new state of consciousness is being received as a free gift. Received. Readiness to receive gift lies in the practice of the 12 steps. Well, I don't know what you came in here with other than the disease of alcoholism, and I didn't know this for many, many years. But not only did I have a broken ability to drink button, I had no ability to receive. I was born almost with a broken receiver. Or maybe I just got it damaged somewhere along the way at the beginning. And I have begun to be restored to a person that is capable of receiving. I cannot tell you what that has meant to me. And it is just happening to me in the last couple of years. The ability to receive. I had no understanding what that meant. I understand about giving. Kind of have to end up understanding about that if you're on AA for any given period of time. I mean, we're always actively giving. But oh my God, what I did not know about receiving. And it says right here, a new state of consciousness and being is received as a free gift. The readiness to receive the gift lies in the practice of the 12 steps. I mean, if anybody would have told me that this God that I was unsure even existed, that had taken so many changes and forms and continues to do so, that I would be able to receive all of that, that it was never not there, that it was always there, that it was so gigantic and so big, and that all I had to do was make way to receive it. Oh. So, this is a giant promise, these 12 steps, aren't they? It says, the magnificent reality is what they call the receipt of that gift. The magnificent reality, written right here in the table of contents. I mean, do we need to go any further? I could spend the rest of my life on this. Readiness to receive the gift lies in the practice of the 12 steps. The magnificent reality, period. And then it goes on to say, what about the practice of these principles in all of our affairs? I mean, how do you make this how do I now restore my spiritual memory because I was born to receive. I was born to receive so that I could become a channel to give it away, to make more room. I mean, what is, you know, the, I have to tell you that my trip to Tulsa will be more meaningful than I think anything that will happen to you, because I will have again made myself a channel to give away whatever is in there so that I can make room to receive new things, new experiences, new information. I mean, my God, I should be thanking you every second for the opportunity to take a moment to just open myself up and say, take it away, whatever it is. How can I give you all there is? Because I'm going to get so much more. And then I'm going to have this new, exciting possibility in my mind of thinking of new things and seeing things through a different eye. Amazing. Monotony, pain, and calamity turn to good use by practice of the steps. How do you turn pain to good use? Why, you say, I understand. I have had the experience of that. And that's all I can give you. Would you like a cup of coffee? Can I hold you? Have you eaten today? Growing spiritually is the answer to our problems. And my friend Ruth King says, the only problems are spiritual problems, so the only solution is a spiritual solution. It sure takes the great big problem of alcoholism that we receive the solution for, or we wouldn't be sitting here. And then, obviously, every other problem is solvable, isn't it? Growing spiritually is the answer to our problems, placing spiritual growth first. You don't have to be as slow and determined and resistant and Irish as I am. And you do not have to resist, it says first. I didn't catch that right away for the first number of years. Placing spiritual growth first. I was too frightened. I was much too frightened to place that first. I had too much power in money, property, prestige, and all the other things I used to defend myself so that I would not have to feel you. Too much power. It took a long time for me to be able to say, there's enough inside now. And restore them in the sense that, a friend of mine, Cubby Selby, says that for him, what happened was that he stopped praying to God. And he started to pray from God. And the day that I heard that, I cried openly in a meeting because I understood for the first time in my sobriety that it was really true that this great reality was deep within. That this creative intelligence was constant and forever and available. It is I that did not access it. That they called God friend. Friend. That God could be my friend. I needed a friend. Why, I need a friend more than I need a God. Big. Practice these principles in all our affairs. They seem to repeat that over and over and over. I wonder if Bill Wilson knew something about our nature. It says, instincts restores to true purpose. And you know, I used to think the true purpose would be this endless, sandaled, robed giving in China. It was the last thing I ever wanted to do. I didn't know that it would be equal share amounts of giving and receiving, giving and receiving, 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 receiving. If you cannot receive, you're out of balance. Understanding is the key to right attitudes. Right action is the key to good living. Now, that information, 90% of which I just underlined with a little yellow marker, is in the first page, 9 pages of the Tormentor, in the table of contents. In the foreword, it says, it presents an explicit view of the principles by which AA members recover and by which their society functions. A's 12 steps are a group of principles, spiritual in the nature. I mean, it really shocked me not too long ago when I found out that the principles and the steps were actually the same thing. Spiritual in their nature, which if practiced as a way of life, can expel the obsession to drink and enable the sufferer to become happily and usefully whole. So the essays which follow were written mainly for members. It is thought by many of AA's friends that these pieces might arouse interest and find application outside of AA itself. Many people, and I share my life now, my life with anybody, not just because I'm an alcoholic, but because I'm a spiritual person who's on the search and grateful to see anybody anywhere in any walk of life, doing whatever they need to do, doesn't matter to me. God is God. We're on the same thing. We're all going there. You know, we were just blessed to have alcoholism as our fate. We're blessed to have that. It's a gift. It's the greatest gift I have ever been given, to have been rendered so hopeless so quickly. I watch other people do it a day at a time, kill themselves. However, sober, I have watched some of my soulmates and myself and members of an Alcoholics Anonymous begin to kill ourselves one day at a time. Acceptable suicide through the negativity of our thinking, through depression, through all of those things. And we must guard against that. We must guard against that. And that's what the steps are for. They're for people who are sober to get through life. Many people, non-alcoholics, report that as a result of the practice of these 12 steps, they are able to meet other difficulties of life. They think that the 12 steps can mean more sobriety for problem drinkers. They see in them a way to happy and effective living for many, alcoholic or not. I really think that that's important, because we as alcoholics, you know, can't go around saying this normie thing and they, we're all the same. April 13, 1939 was when they put the book Alcoholics Anonymous out. In it, alcoholism was, and I'm in the foreword now, in the foreword. The amount of information in this book is extraordinary. The book was called Alcoholics Anonymous, and from it the fellowship took its name. In it, alcoholism was described from the alcoholic's point of view. His new idea now. The spiritual ideas of the society were codified for the first time in the 12 steps, and the application of these steps to the alcoholic's dilemma was made clear. So I have no understanding of people who say it's all in the big book. I don't understand, who do not read the 12 and 12, and I know people who've never done it. And yes, they're sober a long time, some of them. I wouldn't want the nature of their sobriety. It would not be enough for me. You see, I was an alcoholic that wanted all there is. I would have drunk all the scotch in the world. Do you think I'm going to settle for a limited amount of sobriety and spirituality? Absolutely not. I'm an alcoholic. I want all there is. The book Alcoholics Anonymous became the basic text of the fellowship, and it still is. This present volume, the 12 and 12, proposes to broaden and deepen the understanding of the 12 steps as first written in the earlier work. Of course, now Bill Wilson was what, 13, 17 years sober, something like that, and he knew a whole lot more. A whole lot more. Alcoholics Anonymous in 1939, the pioneering period ended, and a chain reaction set in as the recovered alcoholics, carried their message to still others. Recovered. You're all recovered in this room. You're recovered alcoholics. Are you recovered spiritual people? Well, I don't know about that now. That's up to you. But you have not had a drink today. And that's in the forward. A lot of information in there, isn't it? First step of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. We admitted that we're powerless over God and that over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable. I'm powerless over God too. That was probably not a slip there. The steps take us from beginning to believing in God to knowing there's a God. You know, one of the spiritual contributors to our program, Carl Jung, was asked on his deathbed if he believed in God. And he said, oh no, I do not believe in God. I know there is a God. That's extraordinary. And I think that's what the 12 steps do. I think they take us from beginning to believe to knowing. And oh, what a feeling it is. You have to know the problem in order to know the solution. And as you read the doctor's opinion in chapter 1, well, that'll tell you what the problem is. It says right here, in the first three lines of this chapter, this step, who cares to admit complete defeat? Practically no one, of course. Every natural instinct cries out against the idea of personal powerlessness. It does not say drunken, down on the ground, falling down drunk, powerlessness. You are sober people. It says personal powerlessness. Lack of acceptance is personal powerlessness. Lack of humility. The result of soul sickness that occurs as a result of those kind of things when you're sober a number of years. Personal powerlessness. We have warped our minds into such obsession for destructive drinking that only an act of providence can remove it. How many of you have been sober and allowed the thoughts to get away with you and have warped your mind into such destructive thinking? that only an act of providence can remove it. And if you, you know, stay around AA and continue to go to meetings and don't drink, why, you'll have that opportunity. But if you don't stay around AA, then you're going to make the decision to drink. That's why you have to stay no matter what, even when you don't believe it. Staying is the most important thing of all. It talks about how powerlessness will bleed us of all self-sufficiency. Another way of saying unmanageability. All will to resist its demands. How many of you have ever been obsessed? Have you had any will to resist the demands of that obsession? Not really. Talks about once this stark fact is accepted, our bankruptcy as a going human concerns is complete. It says, take our first steps toward liberation and strength, our admission of personal powerlessness. They say it again. I mean, I love that Bill Wilson was so redundant. He either repeats exactly the same statement, so we were sure to get it, or he says it in just a few changes of the words ever so slightly. But the redundancy in the book is fantastic. I need that kind of thing. First it used to annoy me, you know, when I was in my rebellious stage. Now I'm grateful for it. We know that little good can come to any alcoholic who joins AA unless he has first accepted his devastating weakness and all its consequences. I mean, that is really a clear statement of surrender. Later on, it becomes a definition for the sixth step. Until he so humbles himself, his sobriety, if any, will be precarious. Absolutely necessary part of the first step, beginning to lay the groundwork for what? The seventh step. I mean, your first 24 hours of sobriety lays the groundwork for the change of your whole life. That surrender, that humility, that willingness. Wow, we could only have it as we had it when it was under that little umbrella and grace of God that we had in the first 24 hours, 48 hours, 60 hours. Most powerful spiritual moment of my life. It took me 18 years to remember it. It took me the last 10, 29 years to say, oh, how powerful it was. Perhaps I can now begin to experience it a thought at a time. Of real happiness, you will find none. Well, what is real happiness? You know, you can be sober, but without the willingness of acceptance in the sixth step and the humility in the seventh to ask for God's help, well, then no real happiness can really happen because you're still self-reliant. You're still doing it yourself. The principle that we shall find no enduring strength until we first admit complete defeat is the main taproot from which our whole society has sprung and flowered. It is the root of powerlessness, is hopelessness. I hope that you got here in a very hopeless state. I hope that a few times in your sobriety you hit that again, sober, so that you can reach out and grow. I mean, I actually denied that it was happening to me for years. I thought more people, more property, more prestige, more will help me not feel the inner hopelessness of not having that spiritual connection, the beginning of doubt that God even existed. Why does everybody else seem to have this look in their eye, and why don't I have it? The hell is wrong with me? What's gone? I don't have this. There's a void in me. What's wrong with me? You know, I was running around Alcoholics Anonymous and I wasn't, and saying, honestly, I don't get it. You know, I've got all this stuff. I'm supposed to be completely content and happy. I mean, what else do I have to have? Picket fences, dogs, cats. I don't have dogs. You know, all these things. It's supposed to be better. It's supposed to be better. Never thought about inside. It says, our sponsors declare that we were the victims of a mental obsession so subtly powerful that no human amount of human power could break it. That there was, they said, no such thing as personal conquest for all this compulsion by unaided will. I don't know what happened in your sobriety, but believe me, that has happened to me, not just when I was sober. I mean, as I've been sober. I wasn't drinking when I've had these periods of obsession and that driven will, workaholism, for instance, for me. First we were smitten by an insane urge that condemned us to go on to drinking, and then by an allergy of the body that ensured we could ultimately destroy ourselves in the process. Description of powerlessness. Talks about even those last gaspers often had difficulty in realizing how hopeless they were. That is why the first edition of the book Alcoholics Anonymous, published when our membership was small, dealt with low bottom cases only. They're telling you, read the book. Do not be prejudiced against this. We have written this years later for you now
to talk about the daily living, you're already off the ground. You're on your feet. Now this is what we do to move forward. Many less desperate tried AA but did not succeed because they could not make the admission of hopelessness. What is hopelessness? It's a state of mind. How do you get out of it? You accept it. The minute you accept it, you have surrendered. The minute you have surrendered, you ask for help. The steps are all about that. They're all about hopelessness, 1. Acceptance, 6. Help me, 7. Stay helping me, 10 and 11. Thank you, 12. It was then discovered that when one alcoholic had planted in the mind of another the true nature of his malady, that person would never be the same again. Along the way, a few people have planted in my mind that my problem was a spiritual deficiency. Way before I found it in the book, I heard about it. And I saw these people, and they said to me, if you go on the search for God, well, thank you very much. If you go on the search for God, you will find a happiness you will be unable to describe. In fact, if you try to describe it or put a limitation on it and a result, it will be limited. And they planted that seed. And I listened to these people because I knew one of them was Betsy Riordan. We used to go to yoga class together, and she was over 1,000 years. And she was much more limber in that yoga class than I was. And I couldn't understand it. And I thought, Jesus, is this spirituality that can make you this limber? So it doesn't even matter what your motives are. But she planted that in my mind. And I think we do that with one another when we talk on the phone or when we read something or we're in these step practices and we're willing to practice a step a month and we're doing it with a friend or 3 people or 2 people or 10 people. It doesn't really matter. As long as you've got a buddy in the car and you're driving down the street to have a cup of coffee and you're talking about that, well, that's what we're sharing, the true nature of our malady. And what it is now is to avoid soul sickness and to have a connection with the spirit. That's what it is for me. It says the answer is a few people will sincerely try to practice the AA program unless they have hit bottom. I did not sincerely try to practice. I did it, but didn't practice it. The program of Alcoholics Anonymous is outlined in the 12 steps until I hit a spiritual bottom. I didn't do it. For practicing the AA's remaining 11 steps mean the adoption of attitudes, which is the preparation for a miracle, and actions, which is to activate the spiritual intuitive memory that almost no alcoholic who is still drinking or obsessed can dream of taking. Under the lash of alcoholism, we are driven to AA, and there we discover the fatal nature of our situation. When we first got sober, we know what that was. Now it's a darkness. They describe it in the 7th step on page 73 as a retreat into this dark place. Then, and only then, do we become open-minded to the conviction as willing to listen. To listen for what? For the answer? As the dying can be, we stand ready to do anything which will lift this merciful obsession from us. Some obsessions render us so powerless that we lose hope, which leads to unmanageability. The root of alcoholism was hopelessness. The root of power is hope. So they leave you knowing that the power and the hope comes in the 2nd step. And anything placed in front of my God today will render me hopeless and powerless. Absolutely. Anything. That's why I don't go anywhere. I can't bring my God. We have become one and the same. Step 2. The step of power. The step of being restored to balance. The step of a new idea. You see, it's an old idea to be powerless. It's an old idea to give away your power. It's an old idea to be obsessed like that. It's an old idea to have to live your life in a darkness. It's an old idea to be afraid. It's an old idea not to have this peace of mind all the time. And the second step came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Why? It's the solution. It's the we have been reduced to a state of absolute helplessness and one. You now declare that none but a higher power can remove our obsession. Step 2. Obsession, soul sickness, blocking out the sunlight of the spirit, casting a shadow on your own path, whatever you want to call that. It says that it is a state of mind This is the beginning of the end, and so it is, the beginning of the end of his old idea, of his old life, which are old ideas, and the beginning of emergence of a new one, a new idea, a new idea. It's important that we have a new idea. An old idea is to be a drunk. A new idea is to be a sober person. An old idea is to be unhappy. A new idea is to be happy. An old idea is to have treacherous peace of mind. A new idea is to have consistent peace of mind. And this is where it states the first slogan, you know, take it easy. Alcoholics Anonymous does not demand that you believe anything. All of its 12 steps are but suggestions. Second, to get sober and to stay sober. You don't have to swallow all of step 2 right now. Little did they know, and I know that they would tell me this, what this would mean. It will take me the rest of my life, and I'm very lucky many more lives, to swallow all of step 2. Looking back, I find that I took it piecemeal myself. Third, all you really need is a truly open mind. Now, what does a person who has a truly open mind, how do they behave all the time? What is the one characteristic of a person with a very open mind? Well, they ask 1,000,000 questions. They live in the question of life. They're curious. They're always asking questions. And he says again, just in case we didn't get it, and again I say, all you need is an open mind. The minute I stopped arguing, I could begin to see and feel. Right there, step 2 gently and very gradually began to infiltrate my mind. He didn't just say, I begin to see and think. He said, I begin to see and feel. Right now, right there, step 2 gently and very gradually began to infiltrate my life. Well, what that means to me is that my higher self, my integration of my higher self, you know, the better nature of my angel, whatever you want to call it. And below, it's the beginning of how to come to believe. Because you have to stop fighting everything and everybody. And that's an old idea, that we have to fight everything and everybody. And the new idea is that we don't have to fight everything and everybody. To acquire it, I only had to stop fighting and practice. How many times I've used the word practice because I'm reading it out of the 12 and 12, the rest of AA's program as enthusiastically as I could. You'll be sure to discover one that suits you only if you look and listen. This is a God they're talking about. Many a man like you has begun to solve the problem by method of substitution. And so too it was for me that I substituted the God from Ireland and the convents and all of this to another God and to another God and to another God. And I brought the old one back and I added a new one and went to angels and I got rid of them and I brought them back. And it's a process of substitution, and so too is life. And put your hand in the fire enough times, you'll start substituting. Surely you can have faith. Even the minimum of faith will be enough. You will find many members who have crossed the threshold this way. This is really an important part of the 12 and 12 for me. It says, I'll take a moment. You can, if you wish, make AA itself your higher power. There's a very large group of people who have solved their alcohol problem. In this respect, they are certainly a power greater than you, who have not even come close to a solution, who may not even come close to a solution. Surely you can have faith in them. Even this minimum of faith will be enough. You may find many members who have crossed the threshold this way. I personally am very uncomfortable when the group is the higher power or a person is the higher power, because it's just supposed to be a threshold. I mean, when I read this, I became a better sponsor immediately because I realized my responsibility was to assist that person crossed the threshold so that they would have their own relationship with their own concept of their own God. And it couldn't be mine. All of them will tell you that once across, a lot of people never cross. It's their own choice. Once across, their faith broadened and deepened, and relieved of the alcohol obsession, their lives uncountably transformed. Very important for me to know that my role in Alcoholics Anonymous is nothing more than to hold somebody's hand across the threshold because somebody held mine, so that they get ready to hold somebody else's hand across the threshold. Really important. When I was very little in Ireland, my favorite little picture, you know, we have pictures around our necks on the walls, and we had them everywhere, was the angel going over a bridge with two little children, because I was terrified of water. And when I would have to cross the little river from my grandmother's house to my Aunt Annie's house, very short distance, Dave the dog would have to take me. And Dave would step on the outside, and I would walk in the center. And I was so hoping that this angel was really, really real, because I would pretend I was under the wings of this angel, just like in the picture when I was crossing over this little bridge. I mean, the most ripple in that water came from an odd salmon jumping up and down. But to me, you know, it was a big, huge, it might as well have been Niagara Falls that I was crossing. And later on in my life, you know, I now relate that to how I must be with people who, when they first come onto the program, I have to protect them and fold them into my wings and make sure that they know the simplest of things, like I needed to be told. You know, how to clean their house, how to eat properly, how to sleep, how to dress themselves again, how to do all these simple things, you know, simple things. How to find a seat in a meeting, how to find the directory, how to reach out your hand, how to become a little coffee, go for coffee with somebody. You know, all the little simple things. That's my job. That's the most important job of all. If I do that well enough, they'll want to stay. And if they want to stay, well, they're going to run into enough people, hopefully, that are going to talk about God. That when they, you know, say, thank you for my sobriety, thank you God, thank you this, I found this thing, I'm changing, I'm just a better person, I've had a completely different outlook on something, which is a miracle. And then they're on their way. And then I can let go of that wing and let them make their mistakes. And let them fall down and get up. Because if I've done a good job of protecting them across the bridge, they have crossed the threshold, then nothing can happen to them in Alcoholics Anonymous unless they drink. Nothing can happen to them. They can't make a mistake. And every experience that they have, why, it's only going to bring them closer to God. So it's impossible, once you cross the threshold, in my opinion, to have a bad experience. There's no such thing as good or bad, black, white, you know, it's all the same. It's only experience, and it only leads closer to God. And then they go on here to describe, and I won't take the time to do it, you know, the difference between agnostic, religious, atheist. Why should we be bothered with theological abstractions and religious duties or with the state of our souls here or hereafter? I love that he puts here or hereafter. I was the kind of alcoholic that when I chose to die that night, I did not kill myself. I ended up on AA instead. Can you imagine? I did not kill myself because I was so desperate and so lonely and so hurt and so in pain that I knew to kill myself would do nothing more but to have the spirit of who I was, and I believed in nothing at that time, the spirit of who I was go on with the same agony and same grief and same pain, so what the hell was the point of even killing yourself? That was my state of hopelessness upon joining Alcoholics Anonymous. And I love in here, so when it says souls here and hereafter, it really appeals to someone like me. Because that's what I'm doing now. I'm not being nice and in Tulsa, Oklahoma, so that I can go on and grow wings or something. On the contrary, I'm just doing it so that I can feel better today. If I feel better today, I'm a little more, less afraid. I'm less afraid. I'm less afraid as a result of being here. That's all. A little more peace of mind. I'm going somewhere. I'm going somewhere. I'm going somewhere here, and I'm going somewhere there, and I'm going somewhere when I go on, and I'll get to see my uncle who passed away yesterday morning, actually, in Ireland as I was coming here. I just got the call. And I mean, you know, there's no waste. There's no waste in God's universe. There's no judgment. There's no right and wrong. I can't wait to do what I'm supposed to do here, and I can't wait to get going. Can't wait to stay. Can't wait to go. Isn't that an exciting place to be for someone that didn't even want to kill themselves because it was so hopeless? It said we had to look for our lost faith. It was an aid that we'd rediscovered it. Didn't say discover it. It says rediscovered it. And we're talking about the second step, which is the restore step. And then it tells us that in the second step, if we go for this power, why, they helped us to get down to right size. You know, right size to me, blasphemous as it may sound to you, is to be equal with God. We're the same size. We're one and the same. We blend in and out. If my will and God's will is in unison today, why, you wouldn't even know the difference. If it's not, I'm bigger. I'm in charge. You're in trouble. When we began to do that, we received, it says right here again, we received the gift of faith, a faith which works. This faith is for you too. They're talking about the foundation for the third step. Every step that precedes a step lays the foundation for the next step. Makes us teachable, acceptable, this humility they talk about. By their example, they showed us that humility and intellect could be compatible, provided we placed humility first. When we began to do that, we received the gift of faith, a faith which works. This faith is for you too. I love that he wrote so gently and so kindly and so givingly, and I like sitting around the fireplace. This faith is for you too. Just in case you think that it's not. This meant, of course, that we had to substitute negative thinking for positive thinking. Negative thinking for positive thinking. A guy said to me once, you know, all this feely-feely stuff you talk about and negative thinking and positive thinking, what the hell's that got to do with Alcoholics Anonymous? This is an action program, for God's sake. And I said, oh, it says here, this all meant, of course, that we had to substitute negative for positive thinking. I thought, well, you must not have read the 12 and 12. But then you spilled more on your chai than I drank, so what the hell, you know? That's how it works. I had, you know, for years they used to say stuff like that when I first got sober. It used to annoy me. What do you say back to something like that? And then somebody said, well, Lila, you don't know the answer, the pat AA answer. I said, no, where have I been? I missed it. What is the answer to where you spilt more on your tie than, you know, I spilt more on my tie than you drank? Then you obviously didn't drink enough, is the answer. It says, moreover, we could avoid looking at some of our own shortcomings, which is to blame. Self-righteousness, the very thing that we had contemptuously condemned in others, was our besetting evil, which is to judge. Defiance is the outstanding characteristic of many alcoholics. More often, though, we had made up with some major calamity, and to our way of thinking, lost out because God deserted us. When we encountered AA, the fallacy of our defiance was revealed. At no time had we asked the question what God's will was for us. Instead, we had been telling God what it ought to be. No man we saw could believe in God and defy him too. Belief meant reliance, not defiance. And in AA, we saw the fruits of this belief, men and women spared from alcohol's final catastrophe. We saw them meet and transcend their other pains and promises. We saw them calmly accept impossible situations, seeking neither to run nor to recriminate. This was not only faith, it was faith that worked under all conditions. We soon concluded that whatever price in humility we must pay, we must pay. Huge promise on the second step. This answer has to do with the quality of faith rather than the quantity. This has been our blind spot. What they're really saying is, you know, the lack of acceptance is the blind spot. In both cases, we had been asking something for nothing, which is asking for God's will without our own cooperation, which they will explain and we will get into in step six. The fact that we really hadn't cleaned house so that the grace of God could enter and expel the obsession. In no deep or meaningful sense had we ever taken stock of ourselves, step four, made amends to those we had harmed, step 8 and 9, or freely given to any other human being without any demand for reward. We had not even prayed rightly. We had always said, grant me my wishes, instead of thy will be done. The love of God and man we understood not at all. Therefore, we remained self-deceived and incapable of receiving enough grace to restore us to sanity. A lot of stuff. So the questions are to remove us from the self-deception is why we have to ask questions. And since answers require a reliance on a greater spirit, it's a great way to practice that reliance, is to ask questions. To ask a question is to make room and to receive an answer. Serenity prayer takes care of that. It's the greatest question of them all, isn't it? It says, sanity is defined as soundness of mind. Therefore, step two is the rallying point for all of us. True humility and an open mind can lead us to faith, which is step three. And every AA meeting is an assurance that God will restore us to sanity if we rightly relate ourselves. True humility, acceptance of yourself today, good, bad, or indifferent, without qualification, without judgment. And if we relate ourselves to God, well, then we would be using proper use of our will and God's will, and step six will tell you how to do that. Lays the foundation for the next step. And how do we rightly relate ourselves to God? Well, by substitution of experience. And they mentioned that earlier. The redundancy is extraordinary. Are you doing all right? Do you want a cup of coffee or anything? Okay, we'll do step three and then we'll break for step four. How's that? Step three. Well, you know, the disease of alcoholism is threefold: physical, emotional, and spiritual. And this is a decision. This is a very important step. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood that God. A decision to go for this new idea, which step two now is. You see, the old idea is step one, that you have to live in a powerless state of unmanageability. And the new idea is that you can be restored, and you can be restored to balance. It's a brand new idea. Now, the decision is, you're going to stay with the old idea, or you're going to stay with the new idea. And that's what you're really doing in the third step. You're making a decision to turn yourself over to the question, so you can get the answer to how to have this new idea fulfill and occupy your life. Or you won't make that decision, and you will be stuck with the old idea, and you will do that by yourself. Place of self-reliance. Terribly painful place, I have found. Make a decision to turn our will and life over to the care of God as we understood that God. Practicing. Starts out the first word in the first and the step is practicing. Practicing. The habit of improving your spiritual memory can only come by practicing. Not by talking and thinking, but by actually practicing. It's a conscious action that requires, that precedes even the ability to think through the process. The only key is willingness. In the first two steps, we engage in reflection. What is wrong? What can I do about it? What is the problem? Ah, yes, that's the solution. We saw that we were powerless over alcohol, but we also perceived that faith of some kind, if only in AA itself, is possible to everyone or anyone. Of course, later that gets transferred to God if you have the right angel helping you across the bridge. These conclusions did not require action. They required only acceptance. Ah, why is it that I still don't have a full grasp of acceptance being the answer to everything in life? I don't, you know. It's not built in there yet. I mean, every now and then intuitively I know that, but it's almost like a conscious, I still don't have it. You know, I still consciously have to come to that all the time. And yet, when I joined Alcoholics Anonymous, I had nothing but acceptance of the complete and utter hopelessness of my situation. And then I got enough reliance, self-reliance, smashed in there, that I began to dispel all this magic of acceptance. And the miracle of the acceptance then, you know, began to dissipate. Oh, it stayed waiting for me. But I had so many little smudges of darkness around it because I was doing it by myself that I could barely see it anymore. And we live in a miracle. We are a miracle. We just don't notice. Like all the remaining steps, steps three call for affirmative action, for it is only by action that we can cut away the self-will which has always blocked the entry to God. I love that because it's really clear. You got to cut it away. Can't change it, redefine it, call it something else, rationalize it. You got to cut it away. Gone. Of course, then six helps with that too, that contrary action. Faith, to be sure, is necessary. And also four and five, because you have to know what to cut away. And after you figure out what to cut away, you have to talk to somebody else so that you can cut away the truth. And they'll help you with that, because on your own, you probably are not going to be as clear as the person you're talking to is going to say, well, I'm not sure now. Did you forget this one little thing? And then when you get to God, to have God help you cut it away, well, you're going right to the core. It just saves time. Faith, to be sure, is necessary, but faith alone can avail us nothing. Faith alone, without a decision, means nothing. You can have all the faith in the world, but if you're not deciding to involve God in that, you don't have it. It's there, but you don't have it. It requires a decision. We can have faith yet keep God out of our lives. Therefore, our problem now becomes just how and by what specific means shall we be able to let God in? Questions. Step three represents our first attempt to do this. In fact, the effectiveness of the whole AA program will rest on how well and how earnestly we have tried to come to a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand it. Many times in the 12 and 12 where you will come to a place where you better stop and pause and say, do I fully understand that? That's why it's going to take forever for me to get through this book in my life, because I keep going back and I say, you know, I missed that the first time. But it's saying, don't go on now till you grasp this part. Ah, you can go on if you want to, but you're going to come back. Once we have placed the key of willingness in the lock and have the door ever so slightly open, we find that we can always open it more, though self-will may slam it shut again, as it frequently does, It will always respond the moment we pick up the key of willingness, the willingness to make room for God. Every man and woman who has joined Alcoholics Anonymous and intends to stick has, without realizing it, made a beginning on step three. That was the first decision you ever made, practically unconscious, in a state of utter acceptance and desperation, the decision to stay. Greatest decision of your life. Already a willingness has been achieved to cast out one's own will and one's own ideas about the alcoholic problem in favor of those suggested by AA. The old ideas, well, chapter 3 tells you a ton of old ideas about how you can continue to drink successfully. For the new ideas, from a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, this is, well, nothing works, you know. This is the end of the road. There's nowhere else to go. The seat belongs to you. It's all a matter of old ideas and new ideas. This all makes sense at the end of the 2 days. And they talk about how you feel like a hole in the donut. And, of course, this process by which instinct and logic always seeks to bolster egotism and so frustrate spiritual development, which is the ability to have you have real problems versus imagined problems, insanity, really. The trouble is that this kind of thinking takes no real account of the facts, and the facts seem to be these. The more we become willing to depend upon a higher power, the more independent we actually are. Therefore, dependence, as AA practices it, is really a means of gaining true independence of spirit, getting back to the true power, who you are, the greatest reality deep within you. Deep within you. Doesn't everybody really want to hope that that's true? That it's deep within you and not out there, where it can be taken away, blown away, that it's really deep, that you're really connected to something? Can't tell you how many years I have searched believing that that wasn't true, hoping it was. Unconscious of the independence, let's see. Every modern hound, and they go on about the electricity thing, it's a great example. I'm going to skip it for now. But it says basically that our main hope is that nothing will ever cut off that supply of current, that electricity that we've come so used to. Well, I don't know, but from once you start the search for the spiritual thing and you get a little bit of it at all, then the most horrifying thing will be when you think that's cut off and you don't have this conscious contact. And if I were to define what insanity means for me today, it's that I have, for a moment, not had that conscious contact with my God. It's a horrible place to be. At the moment our mental and emotional independence is in question, how differently we behave, how persistently we claim the right to decide all by ourselves just what we shall think and just how we shall act, that is the problem. But all of our decisions are ours alone. Besides, we think there is no one that we can blame. It says here we can surely trust. But isn't that really what we do, is we blame them? And then it talks about how each man plays God and what happens as a result of this self-reliance on step three. When you don't make the decision, I am filled with anger and fear. I am right and you are wrong. Self-righteousness imposes its will upon the rest. I have less peace and less brotherhood than before. It is a bone-crushing juggernaut whose final achievement is ruin. And they describe hopelessness. They describe what happens if you don't make the decision when you have the knowledge. Sober. So it is by circumstance, rather than by virtue, that we have been driven to AA, have admitted defeat, step one, and have acquired the rudiments of faith, step two and three, and now begin to make a decision to turn our will and our lives over to have acquired the rudiments of faith, step two, and now want to make a decision to turn our will and our lives over to a higher power, step three. They continue to summarize the steps. They continue to tell you that one leads into two, to three, that they're all the same. They're laying the groundwork. By the time we get to six and seven and eight and nine, it'll be so redundant. It's all the same wording. It's all the same direction. It's all the same everything. And it becomes your ability to receive becomes greater by the time you've gotten through the third step. You have begun to surrender to your own need of acceptance in your daily life today. So how exactly can a willing person continue to turn his will and his life over to the higher power? He made a beginning, as we have seen, when he commenced to rely upon AA for the solution of his alcohol problem. By now, though, the chances are that he has become convinced that he has more problems than alcohol. Preparation for step four. And that some of these refuse to be solved by the sheer personal determination and courage he can muster. They simply will not budge. They make him desperately unhappy and threaten his newfound sobriety. Our friend is still victimized by remorse and guilt when he thinks of yesterday. Bitterness still overpowers him when he broods upon those he's envied, and financial insecurity, etc., etc., etc. They're talking about sober fears. They're talking about worry. They're talking about judgment. Summarizing it for you, but it's all there. They talk about his newfound sobriety. Well, let me tell you something. I was 18 years sober when this happened to me. Perhaps that's newfound sobriety in the realm of the many lifetimes I intend to live. His lone courage and unaided will cannot do unmanageability. Surely he must now depend on somebody or something else. Step two, coming to believe. At first, that somebody is likely to be his closest AA friend, most important person in your life if you look back, who is the other little newcomer sitting beside you. Really, it does not give you great heart-filled feeling to walk into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and see somebody you got sober with. The best. The best. He relies upon the assurance that his many troubles, now made more acute because he cannot use alcohol to kill the pain, can be solved too. Big promises here. Of course, the sponsor points out that our friend's life is still unmanageable, even though he is sober. That, after all, only a bare start on AA's program has been made. And we're talking about sober problems. First you have the group, then you have the sponsor, your friend, or someone you're hanging with out with, preferably a sponsor who will take you across the threshold. And then you have the steps that they'll lead you to and show you how to use. And then you'll have God. And that's the process. That's the process. Same as having one drink, two drinks, three drinks, four drinks. One drink, I'm happy. Two drinks, we're all happy. This is not true. Three drinks, I'm having a spiritual experience. Four drinks, I'm unconscious. AA, sponsor, steps, God. This is just where the remaining steps of the AA program come in. Nothing short of continuous action practice upon these as a way of life can bring the much desired result. Then it is explained that the other steps of the AA program can be practiced with success only when step three is given a determined and persistent trial. I mean, I could spend a year on step three and not be ready to go on. That's why we limit it to a month. But now it appears that there are certain things which only the individual can do. All by him. You know, they say it's a we program and all of that kind of stuff. Well, I think it just read better in the book. My experience is that the we keep us together so that the I can do the program. That the fellowship protects me while the program changes me. Now it appears there are certain things which only the individual can do. All by himself and in the light of his own circumstances, he needs to develop the quality of willingness. When he acquires willingness, he's the only one who can make the decision to exert himself. Trying to do this is an act of his own will. It says over and over, you hear in AA, God's will, God's will, God's will, God's will. What about your will? Your will got you out of bed here, cold Tucson morning. Tulsa, where did I say, Tucson? To create our own city. Trying to do this act of his own will. Your own will is critical. Your own will kept you here. Your own will made you sit in your hands when you didn't want to stay in the meeting at the beginning. Your own will found the chair. Your own will found the sponsor. Your own will found the friend. Don't ever underestimate the power of your own will. If you don't realize how powerful it is, you won't be able to use it to access God. And you might think that it's powerful enough for you to access another kind of spirit in a bottle. So your own will is critical. And all through the steps, you will be called upon to use your will to make room for God. Over and over and over again, beginning here clearly in the third step, where it says trying to do this is an act of his own will. All of the 12 steps require sustained and personal exertion of your will to conform to these principles, and so we trust to God's will. So, you know, people have that constant question that's answered differently every time I think of it, but what is God's will? What is God's will? That I use my will. Coordinate and integrate with God's will. That's God's will for me. That I use my will properly. That's it. If I use my will properly, I'm doing it with a partner. If I do it with a partner, I got a chance at calamity and serenity having a match. I might be balanced today.